The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission, your mind. A very special Mission Mind. As a matter of fact, we are recording the show on July 4th. 249 years our country has been wallowing around and trying to figure out what we're doing. And I can't believe we're going to turn 250 next year. And a man that's been a big part of a lot of successes, period, when it comes to not-for-profits and businesses. Michael Coleman's the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank, hashtag H-A-F-B, hafb.org.com.net. You can find him. First of all, happy 4th of July, my friend. And thank you. I let you say, I said, do you want to work tomorrow? I texted last night. I gave everyone else the day off. I usually work on days because I don't consider this work. And I said, you want to work tomorrow? Let's do it. And you did. And I'm so happy to hear that because anytime I get a chance to talk to Michael Coleman, I'm better for it. So good morning. Good afternoon. Happy 4th of July to you, my friend. I love you, man. What's going on?
Yeah, glad to be here with you. I will do 4th of July festivities later, but I can't think of a better place that I'd want to be right now talking about current events with my good friend.
We're going to go through the big, beautiful bill here in just a second. But you just by speaking with you, I've already got an idea, and this idea may take the entire 30 minutes up. But we are talking about now. I was brought to the attention by Kip Kiefer, who does a show called Need to Know, one of the biggest patriotic guys I know, that actually July 2nd should be the day we're actually celebrating, because that's the day everything signed. It just took to the 4th that we actually got it out. I was like, oh, that's fine, whatever. But I understand July 4th is the day we recognize our independence. And it's amazing because I got a lot of friends of mine that travel. And they'll go to Europe, they'll go to London. There's bars over there that are twice as old as our country. You know what I mean? They got bars over there that were made in 1510, and it's amazing. And so our country is really, really young. I would equate it to, I would say that in dog years, I would say we're probably about an 8 or 9 year old. Is that maybe?
Okay. Not
if you specifically take our number of years we've been in existence with the rest of the world. I'm not doing that. I'm just saying where we are growth wise, because we make a lot of dumbass mistakes for a 9 year old.
Yeah.
You know, we're told not to eat more cookies, and we're certainly not in our 20s and 30s. We can't manage ourselves. We're undisciplined. Let's face it. We're the richest company, but we're also the brokest company, and we're fatter than anybody in the world. And we like to shoot each other. We got problems. We got issues, but it's still one of the greatest places in the world to live. And I'm so happy, again, love it or leave it. I'm so happy to be an American, and I know you are too. But the thing about democracy, and it's something that we've tried to introduce to other countries. We tried to do it with Iraq. We've tried to do it in Afghanistan. We tried to do different countries, and we try to show them. And democracy sounds really, really good because it works for us. But it's really difficult to go in to another country that doesn't ever have or has never had democracy, and all of a sudden think that way out of the box. It takes 249 years to figure it out, to get it to work. So I kind of wanted to get your thoughts right off the bat, since we're talking about Independence Day. There's a reason why not everyone's democracy is not worldwide. I don't know how many states or countries are democratic. I don't, it's gotta be a handful. So if it's the best way to run a government or the best way to run life, then obviously, because there are kings and queens, and there's all kinds of different types of socialism. There's all these different types of ways you can run a government, and the rest of the world's doing okay, I guess. You know, I had a friend of mine that just got back from Cuba. And he's like, you know, screw Gaza Strip and Canada. We should buy Cuba and call it the 51st state and turn it into the most beautiful. And the Cubans would love it. They love us. They want us down there. They want us down there. And then China couldn't buy any more land down there. We wouldn't have to worry about Cuba missile crisis and all that crap. Just buy it. Be done with it. It's 90 miles away. So I wanted to ask you, and I know this is an incredibly broad question. Take it wherever you want. How difficult is it? How difficult is a democracy if you're not starting from ground zero? If you're starting a brand new country, and is it fair to even try to introduce a democratic way of thinking into a society that's been living another way for hundreds of years?
Wow, that's a really great question. And I will tell you, my mind has been totally changed over the years. And I will tell you where I used to be. We think, and you know, I think it all started under Reagan, which his geopolitical view was, let's bring freedom because we were fighting communism. And, mm-hmm. and we see the results of communism. It, when you look over in Russia, Stalin ended up after World War II, you know, killing millions and millions and millions of people, their own citizens, starving them to death. And it was mind control. And communism was, you know, this idea that everybody's going to be equal. And so they're not going to have wealthy. You're not going to have poor. Everybody's going to. Well, what it ended up being was you had the controlling people. You still had wealth, but it was wealth through stolen means because mm-hmm. you couldn't have ideas and capitalism and, you know, create your own wealth. And so what happened was everybody was poor. Everybody was in, you know, and so you've seen totalitarian regimes and countries and things like that. And communistic countries, it's never worked. Socialistic countries have never thrived. So I do think this idea that we have freedoms and it is the best system of day. It's created more wealth. It's created more opportunities. While capitalism does have downsides where you can have greed and that greed can lead individuals and even systems sometimes to create what some would view as being unfair. Our justice system has some great challenges, mm-hmm. but who can find a better justice system in the world? So I think capitalism and all the freedom that it employs, we are by far the wealthiest nation, but we're the most innovative. When you look at just the tech industry alone, look at Google, Meta, Microsoft, on and on and on. It all comes from us. Mm-hmm. That's why everybody in the world wants it, because we are allowed to think innovatively. We encourage entrepreneurial thinking. So somebody that has absolutely nothing, comes from nothing, they don't have any prestige, they have an idea, and they put that idea and they go from rags to riches because they have the freedom to do what they need to do or what they would like to do. And other people support that, and boom, you get the rewards from that. So when I was much younger, I said, everybody wants, you see, and that's still to this day, people come over to our country trying to get in because for all the warts that we have, and especially going back in our history with slavery, there's not a better place. People die to get into this country and get a taste of what we're so blessed with. Now, so you extrapolate that and go, well, everybody wants this, but what we found out and what changed my mind is when we went to Iraq. And I'm not talking about Desert Storm. I served in Desert Shield and Desert Storm, talking about Iraq in 2003 after 9/11.
I love where you're going with this, too, by the way. I know where you're going. I love this. Go ahead.
Yeah. So we said we're going to defeat Saddam and we're going to liberate that country. And then we're going to bring freedom to the Middle East. And what we found out was, and then we were going to do the same thing in, and they just call it nation building. You know, we're going to go in and to Afghanistan. We're going to rip out all the terrorists. People are going to celebrate us. They're going to love us. We're freeing them, much like in World War II, where Germany had taken over France. And, you know, when we booted Germany out of that, the French celebrated. We were liberators. They loved us. They adored America. Well, that was because they came from a system where they had, you know, this westernized, the Western culture, 21st century or 20th century at the time, but a westernized culture that we share with Europe and, you know, in Canada and some of those where we have advanced civilizations that have democracies and the people get a say into who's going to lead them and who's not going to lead them. So I think we were expecting,
We were expecting the people to love it, weren't we? I mean,
to love us and to embrace it. What we found out was, is that changing a system of government, and we got a little taste of this because you remember when Boris Yeltsin was in, he wanted to become more, bring Russia into a more capitalistic society.
Yep.
And they made some changes. And initially, while they were learning how to, how that, what that looked like, they were changing over government owned, like management of food supply. Well, the food supply sometimes even got worse until they learned that kind of system. And a lot of people were hating capitalism because they're like, wait a minute, we're supposed to be thriving, because there were a lot of bumps along the road in just changing your mindset. You've got, think about it, in communism and in socialistic societies, where the government owns everything, and they're like, you're guaranteed to get a job, but there's no incentive to come in and work harder. So you have people who will show up. They're just going there. Yeah, I got to work a certain amount of hours. I already know what I'm going to get. There's no incentive. People are not inspired to come in. People are not inspired to give input on how to make to be more, to be more productive, both individually, but also there's a million things wrong with it. The problem, like you said, though, going back to your original premise, was how do you change that? That's not where they're coming from. They've never known that. And so when they come in and you try to take over a system and bring something in that, it not only clashes with where they are, but their whole cultural understanding of how to exist. And a lot of people, what we learned was, is that we can't force people to adopt a system of government of which they don't want.
Yep.
I mean, when we went to Vietnam.
Not when they don't know it. Not when they've never lived it.
That's right. The Korean War, Vietnam, all of this fighting against communism and against an idea. You look at the hundreds of thousands of people who have lost their life, and the pain and the suffering and that war brings. And, you know, this is one area where I very much support the president. I don't support him on all his ideas or all his thinking. But, and I used to be the exact opposite. I was very hawkish. And I'm like, yeah, you don't do what we want you to do. You know, we're going to, or if we feel like you're hurting an ally, whatever it is, yeah, let's just push him up against the wall like a big bully.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I've seen the toll war has taken on families and mental health, in every problem in the world, we shouldn't be the world's police for every sort of issue that's out there. Now, he's not an isolationist. We see that just by the fact he just bombed Iran and the nuclear facilities. But he went very strategically, pulled off something that was really remarkable, took away their nuclear system, at least for a period of time. But he's not at war. We're not at war in the Middle East. You know, we don't have any troops on the ground. The pilots did that. Boom, we're in, we're out. We accomplished an objective that's going to ultimately keep, that's going to help stabilize. But we're not trying to go into Iran and say we're going to take out the Ayatollah and that we're going to bring in democracy and that we're trying to change your government. Now they have the freedom. We weaken their government severely, as did Israel. And if they want to change a government, you know, they're going to have to rise up against their own government and make that happen. But I hope we never get back into that business of war, especially with the idea of a regime change, because sometimes it's very true. The old adage, the devil that you know is better than the devil you don't know.
I don't, yeah.
And all you had to do was look at the, do you remember a few years ago, the Arab Spring, they called it? Mm-hmm. And so like Libya had Muammar Gaddafi, Egypt had Mubarak, I think. Syria had, of course, their dictator, on and on and on, all these countries. But there was stability in those countries in terms of, that there was a functionality. People knew what the rules were, whatever. Now, we look at it and go, what an injustice. That's so unfair, all of those kind of things. But as soon as you remove them and that threat and that fear, and we think, oh, it's better. Now they're going to come together as democracy. Mm-hmm. No, what happened was you took that authority out. And what happened was you created a lot of instability that allowed a lot of bad actors to come in and fill these voids with people who have terroristic mindsets, who have who can further destabilize regions, can hurt world economies, on and on and on. So all of that to say, I don't think that we should be in the business of.
No, and I think we should lead by example, I think, is the best way to go. And people can certainly say we have our issues, and we do. I think we're about an 8 or 9 year old. We need to be disciplined more. We're not very good. We're given all this freedom, but freedom comes at a very high cost and a lot of different things, whether it's COVID, whether it's how we deal with measles, whatever it is. The Iraq thing was really interesting because you've talked about working through Jimmy Hale Mission and through the Heart of Alabama Food Bank about the social economic cultures that you deal with, where people have just been like this for a long period of time. And that's why a lot of people stay in really bad relationships. They have a place to live. They are getting fed every night. Their children are okay. And yeah, he beats the shit out of me, but I know what I get. I know what to expect. And I don't want that change, because change means the uncertainty. And so sometimes you'll go through a bad day to know, at least you know what you're getting, right? You know exactly what you get, as opposed to the uncertainty that comes along with something that could be down the road, that's going to be much bigger. And I think you brought it up. Normally, any type of government, whether it be communism, totalitarianism, whatever it is, that seems more fair to everyone, is going to be reaching and talking to the lower social economic platforms of people in your country.
Yeah.
And first of all, I'm not saying that they shouldn't have a vote. I'm not saying that their empowerment doesn't matter, but they're not always the smartest people because of the situation they're in. And when you empower those people, sometimes they get what they want and they don't know what to do with it.
But oftentimes, and we see this in our own political, challenges with the recent passing of the bill, is those people oftentimes would be less informed, and can be, the less informed you are, the easier it is to manipulate somebody.
Exactly.
Now I would tell you, both sides of the political spectrum are guilty of this. Right now, when you pass this, they pass this huge bill, and there's lots of pluses in it, and there's some minuses in it. Right now, because the Democrats are out of power, they're going to emphasize a lot of fear mongering. Okay, they're going to take away your health care. They're going to take away your SNAP benefits. They're going, and people just take that, and now they're at home right now going, how am I going to feed my kids? And they don't have any idea. I mean, the vast majority of people are not going to have their stuff altered. A lot of things that we talked about that the bill covers are the 1.4 million people who are illegally getting Medicaid and taking up those dollars. And then there's lots of cuts to SNAP. And yeah, there's a lot of people who are on SNAP that's going to be affected. But some of those people are able-bodied people who are able to work. And that's a provision in there that they move that age from 55 to 64.
So, yeah, since you're into it, I want to get more specific because I've got the man on here, and I know people are going to ask this question. The CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank, you've been directly affected by this big, beautiful bill. You can call it whatever you want, and by Donald Trump taking office. And I know you support the president. I know you've thought a lot of the same ways. You and I have had many discussions about that off air.
Yeah.
But you have been directly affected by it because you've been affected. I'm probably going to be affected. It goes down the line. And I want you to tell me specifically who is taking advantage of, say, the SNAP program. Who are we going after by cutting this amount? What are we trying to get rid of? We're not going to forget the people who are getting cut that shouldn't be cut, because anytime you have cut anything, there's going to be at least one person that's not happy. And there's going to be a large, and that goes for Medicaid too. But specifically speaking, when you look at it overall and you see the millions and millions of dollars that are going to be cut going to the Heart of Alabama Food Bank, what specifically are they trying to cut out? Who are they trying to catch? And then once that's done, does that change enough to where you can start bringing some things back for people that need it?
Yeah. So that's really, it's really good to dig down into that, because I think there's always extremes. So let's take the extremes out. I think the vast majority of people would feel comfortable with a government who supplied SNAP or food stamps to people who, let's say the elderly, especially those who had been productive citizens but weren't able to save, barely made enough, whatever. Yes. And you get to a point. And everybody's different physical, but your physical capabilities are, you struggle. Like maybe you're just on Social Security and that's all you have. And so it's tough to live on a fixed income of, $1,000 a month or $1,500 a month. So I don't think anybody that I associate with is going to have problems with giving food supplemental benefits to seniors. I don't think anybody's going to has trouble with people, families who have kids, and those parents are working, or a single mom is working, and there's all sorts of reasons. See, when you this is the challenge. When you talk about single moms, some people think, a woman who just doesn't want to work and she sits around and has kids for. The more kids she has, the more government benefits she has.
Yeah.
So when you say single mothers, that's the category that a lot of people who are against food stamps will take. That's not fair. Yeah. Do those people exist? Yes. But that they aren't the problem. There's not enough of those to put a burden on the government.
Yeah.
We're talking about people who go through divorce. We talk about people who, because of mental health struggles or because of physical health, whatever, can't go to work every day, or can't manage their life. And when we all know that when you put in their Social Security attorneys and all they do, I have a good friend who's one, and you apply for Social Security and then you get turned down. Almost, it seems like almost everybody gets turned down initially.
Yeah.
Then you have to go to an attorney and the attorney has to apply. Anyway, the whole thing process can take 2 to 3 years. And so during that time, people are struggling and money
they don't have in the first place.
Money they don't have. Yeah. All those kind of things. But then a lot of times you have a mother who is working, but still it's not enough for their children. Let's say got a divorce or whatever. And so those food supplements, I think the vast majority of people are okay with people who legitimately need help. I think what happens is you have a lot of 11 million immigrants illegally came across the border. I think that's the estimate under the Biden administration. Regardless of what your thoughts are on immigration, and I'm very pro-immigration, but the burden on our society is that happened was they ended up taking, putting a lot of people on SNAP. And running up that cost, taking it from other federal programs and housing them in hotels, on and on and on. Okay. It just overwhelmed our system. So now we have people on Medicaid taking up Medicaid dollars, 1.4 million they estimate. These are the people that we think if you came into the country illegally, and now we have to support you with our tax dollars, I think most people are going to say that's not a good expense or taxpayer expense. So the question is that you can't pull out a by name. So let's say you're cutting $200 billion over the next 10 years. So that's $20 billion a year less in food stamps. Well, you can't take a by name list across our country of the millions of people getting food assistance and say, yeah, they don't deserve it. They do deserve it, yep. Whatever. Yep. We would like that. Mm-hmm. And the states are supposed to be doing that individually, you know, determining that. But I think the federal government is saying we can't do that, but we've got a lot of people, we got to cut them off. And so if we cut the funding, then the states then are going to get less funding. Then they have to be more responsible about who they assign the money to.
Yeah.
We know right now that California, Minnesota, and Illinois, three very blue states, and their new budgets were running huge deficits. And their response to that was, we are going to cut medical benefits and other type benefits to illegals because we've overpromised and we're running deficits now. So who does that hurt? Well, that hurts the American citizens who are wrestling with poverty. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, I think it's even created a little bit of the backlash. People say, how is Trump doing the best that any Republican's done among Hispanics, African-Americans, Asians, on and on and on? A recent poll had half of Hispanic men support Trump. And it's because Trump is not anti-immigrant. Trump is not anti, but he's like, if you're come here, we want you to do it legally. But he's even talking about how to come up with green cards for people who are helping in the agriculture industry.
Yeah.
You know, we want those people to come. If they want to come and make money and better their life, I think everybody's like, why hurt our farmers? If they're going to come and do the agriculture, let's help them. But let's just come up with a system by which we can track them and they pay taxes and all that kind of stuff. So I think from the federal government's perspective is let's cut this number and then let the states figure out how to clean up their roles. Now, as I talked to you about before the show started, are people going to be who legitimately should be receiving benefits? Is it possible that a lot of those are going to be cut or somewhat going to be cut? Yeah.
Sure.
And that's what we all hate about it. We don't want to, people who are already wrestling with poverty and doing everything they can, or seniors who are struggling, we don't want to do anything to add to their burden. I mean, my mission at the Heart of Alabama Food Bank is to lift up people and to take that burden off of them by, you know, supplementing any assistance that they have. And the reality is a lot of people that are food insecure, are about half the people in Alabama who are considered food insecure, which is they're not getting enough food, are above the SNAP level eligibility line. So it depends on your family. It's a federal standard. On the number of families. I mean, number of people in your family. But half of people in Alabama who are food insecure, I think it's this way across the nation, are above the SNAP line, which means they get zero government assistance, but they're still wrestling with getting enough food. And so we're really targeting those people to help them. This is our working poor. And so, I'm in talks all the time with other CEOs in the food bank, and they are politically, you know, they're very much opposed to this. And the truth of the matter is, in some ways, I am too. When I think about those, it's going to hurt. I think there's some good in it, in that it's going to clean up the roles a little bit, and it's going to require more attention from the state.
Like everything in the stock market, everything else, you know, sometimes it's good to have we call it a correction. You can call it whatever you want. Well, you just go in there and shake the cage and see what lands on the bottom. And if it's still hanging from the top, you keep it. And I do think it's important because it's like a business. You have 100 employees, you start growing, you're doing really, really well. And then you have 200 employees and perhaps you hired a couple of copywriters, some people that you really didn't need, but you were doing really well and they were actually helping. And then you have a down year. So you cut back, you have to fire 40 or 50 people and then you grow again. And so I think anything kind of goes like that. Remarkable stuff. Great talking to you about it. And I really appreciate you being so candid and open. Because I know you've been directly affected and more so now than any, now's the time where we are one of the most giving states in the entire country. More people give in the state of Alabama, I think, than any other state. So, HAFB, hashtag HAFB, Heart of Alabama Food Bank. Anytime you want to help out, volunteer, whatever, and certainly give, you could do the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. You guys do wonderful work and, you know, we'll be here for you and we'll continue to help push that along.
Let me say one final thing.
Sure.
I want to make sure that our listeners know very clearly. I am very concerned about those who may be affected negatively. And we know that there's going to be people in Alabama and every state that is. And food bank system works very hard to make sure that we try to take care of and supplement all of that. That's what our core mission is. And I'm very passionate about it. I just don't want them to get the wrong impression. We are doing a campaign right now because of our donation system and the donations that we get collecting. We actually can provide 5 meals for every dollar that's raised. So we have a campaign going on that's just where somebody could donate $6 a month. And for $6 a month, that would provide one meal for 30 days because for every dollar. So you could feed somebody. You could donate $6 a month and you would know that every day somebody's eating a meal.
That's great.
Because of that small gift. So
what a nice way to put it too. Makes sense.
It's a small gift, but it's a huge impact. So you talk about $6, you're talking about one less Starbucks coffee a month, you know, would provide a meal for somebody for 30 days. It's an amazing opportunity, and we hope our listeners will go to our website hafb.org and they can click on right there $6 a month, just a recurring gift. It'd be very helpful to us.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.